originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest this evening, he's made history as a very successful trainer. He was the first American trainer to win at Royal Ascot. He won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint in 2014 with Judy the Beauty and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf that same year with Hootenanny. But prior to his training career, he was the Eclipse Award winning apprentice jockey in 1984 and won riding titles at Aqueduct, Belmont, and the Meadowlands. With 749 wins as a jockey and 1,708 as a trainer, it is a pleasure to introduce Wesley Ward. Wesley, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
Can't wait to hear your story, Wesley. Yours is definitely a fascinating one. And you're actually from a racetrack family. Your father was a jockey, now a trainer, and your grandfather was an outrider at the New York circuit. And so tell us what it was like growing up in that family, and I'm sure you had a liking to horses pretty early on.
Yeah, that was my only interest when I was a young boy, and I knew what I wanted at a young age, so it's great to come from then all the way to now.
I heard you rode a horse when you were 4 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Horses are my love and my passion and my life. And I knew at a young age that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Which, you know, as I have 3 kids now, and I see that they're going through all these changes, going to school and now into college. My oldest boy in the University of Miami here. They're all kind of figuring out what they want to do in life and big question marks. Whereas when I was just a little boy, I knew what I wanted, and I'm still here today, and until I take my last breath, I know I want to be with the horses.
Now, you grew up in Washington State, and tell us what it was like as a child growing up, and what kind of a kid were you?
I've always been an outside kid, kind of claustrophobic, don't like to be indoors, so, you know, I went into the right profession anyways. Come from very, very small, humble beginnings and real small racetracks and Yakima Meadows and Washington Playfair in Spokane. And, you know, the big track where I'm from would be Seattle Longacres. So it was always nice to go to the big track, of which is really small on racetrack terms. When I eventually made it when I was a kid into New York and riding it, at Belmont Park in Saratoga, it was just like a dream come true when I was only 16 years old. So to be leading rider there at those tracks at such a young age, coming from the county fairs of Washington and Montana, it was just amazing. And Unfortunately, my riding career was only about 6 years until I just couldn't sustain the weight limits anymore and just grew out of my job. I knew immediately that I wanted to go into training, and so when I started training, I was only 21 years old. So, you know, when you start training at 21, you're still really, really young, so you can afford to make the mistakes. So it's all been great, you know, and hopefully continues. But everything, you know, I can't have a more blessed life at this point than I've had now.
So you mentioned the weight, and most riders know the difficulty of not only getting down to that weight, but maintaining that weight throughout your career and maintaining that physical strength. Did you know, obviously your father also had the same issue, he rode and he outgrew the profession, but did you know at an early age that was something you had to be concerned about?
I knew before I rode my first race in New York that there was going to be a time limit as to how long I'd be riding. So, you know, I knew I really wanted to kind of come in with open eyes, even though I was only 16 up until I was nearly 22 when I stopped, to sort of take everything in to go forward, and knew that I was going to be a trainer. And, you know, as I traveled throughout the world, I didn't only watch through a jockey's eyes, but I watched through more so of a horseman's eyes to pick up things as you're going through the, you know, the different places in the world, to take that along with you as an educational experience.
Well, talking about that educational experience, did you learn that way from the beginning, not just how to ride, but how to be a true horseman?
Well, I really didn't know what a true horseman was. It was just you get up every day and you go to the racetrack, and, you know, that's just your life. And, you know, and you try to win. So in trying to win it, you know, at every facet, be it a trainer or a jockey, you know, you try to do what's best for the horse and what's best, you know, to get the horse to the races. And, you know, it's all a big learning process.
Well, you said you were 16 when you started riding, and talking about a learning process, you definitely went through that when you were only 12 years old, riding at the fair circuits for your father. And I'm sure that in itself is an interesting story. I've had riders here on the show who rode at the Busch Tracks in Louisiana. So I'd like to hear the stories you have and how they compare to those kind of Busch Tracks.
That's a great experience going through the county fairs, you know, as most jockeys or trainers when you're starting out. You know, it's a great, you know, it's really the roots of racing, you know, the people that are, it's just a love. And even though they're at the bottom of the racing, is, you know, any race you win is very, very fulfilling, whether it be at a county fair or you win the Breeders' Cup race. It's, you know, it's a sense of accomplishment, and, you know, you always, you know, feel a sense of pride when you can win a race, no matter at what level or at what track or jurisdiction that you're at.
Mostly, I've heard stories about jockeys riding against horses with chickens on their back. Did you ever experience anything like that?
No, I never did experience that. But, you know, at the Blackfoot Indian Reservation in Montana, they tied the young kids to the horses. So I seen that. I didn't actually ride, but I was there watching the races. But I did see that, and helped them from not falling off anyways. Good thing there wasn't any wrecks.
Sounds like quite the experience. At least you didn't have to deal with that. But when you then went to New York, as I mentioned, you had to already have so much experience, which makes sense, the instant success you found. And why did you decide to go to New York?
You know, if you're going to win an Eclipse Award, which at that time, that was my goal when I was a young kid riding, you know, from 12 years old, 13, 14, 15. I'd won over 150 races when I was a young guy throughout those summers I rode. That was a place to do it. And that was a place at the time in racing where they really used the apprentices. And, you know, I got involved with a great agent at the time, Lenny Goodman, Steve Coffin, and a lot of the bigger name jockeys, Braulio Bays, and he was, at that time, he was the greatest agent in the game. And so I was very fortunate to have him and the experience that I had, and with the weight off, you know, the training really looking at me. And the first year in New York, I was just looking at some win pictures the other day, and 3 days after I turned 17 years old, I'd won my 400th race. I had a big caption on the winner circle picture. I opened up one of my old trunks the other day. So, you know, to win 400 races a couple days after you turn 17 was amazing, especially riding in you know, the best tracks in New York. You know, at such a young age, it was just such a great experience.
Incredibly young to have such an accomplishment. And talk about that. Talk about leaving your family to go to the big city, New York. And was that a hard transition for you?
No. You know, the thing about that is, there in the gates of a racetrack, it's all the same, no matter where you're at. Once you're outside, as you said, it can be shocking. You know, but once you get inside the gates of the racetrack, you know, you're turning to the left, and they run, you know, 8 or 9 races a day, and, you know, the grooms and the trainers are leading the horses over to the paddock, and they're putting saddles up, putting the jockeys up, and it's just, as you get to the better tracks, the horses run faster. But once you get inside the gates, it's all the same thing, and that was what really, really helped me when I got to New York, was I felt at home when I got inside once I went through the stable gate, I felt at home.
Again, talking about your young age, Wesley, had you finished high school yet?
No. I went a couple weeks into the ninth grade, and then I started doing those correspondence classes because I was 14 and 15 years old. Those two winters, we were going to my dad was training down in Phoenix, Arizona, so I was working in the mornings at the track and then doing the classes in the afternoon on, you know, where you mail. At that time, they didn't have internet, so you were mailing in your courses.
That had to be a rigorous schedule trying to keep up with school and pursuing your dream.
Well, there wasn't a lot of school involved. It sounds like it, but there was more, you know, I was more focused on the horses. And, you know, I was driven. I knew what I wanted. You know, I was never a kid that veered off track. I was always, you know, never got in trouble or never gotten any issues. Or, you know, I just couldn't wait to get up in the morning to work the horses, because at that time you had to be 16, which is true to today. You have to be 16 to be a jockey, just like driving a car. So, you know, I couldn't wait to be the first one on that racetrack in the morning. And be breezing horses for all the various trainers and whatever tracks we were at. And I knew that the time was going to come where I, at 16, my goal was to be in New York.
When did you realize you were ready for that? Ready to start riding and ready for that big move?
No, I used to go to the county fairs, and at that time, when you were a kid, there wasn't a weight limit. So whatever you weighed, you rode at. So I weighed 80, 85 pounds, and, you know, the riders I were riding against were 120. So, you know, it was a huge weight advantage. You know, I was a fearless young kid, so they'd have 6 races on a county fair card, and I'd won 5. So, I mean, I was always used to winning. And, you know, I couldn't wait to get to New York to ride. And when I brought all that experience there, the trainers in New York couldn't wait to ride me. So they were getting the you know, 10 pounds and 7 pounds and 5 pounds off with a young kid that was fearless, that had all that wealth of experience. That's why I got so much, you know, a really, really big opportunity along with the agent I had. You know, essentially, you know, I couldn't miss. And, you know, but it is after I lost my apprentice allowance, and then, you know, I started to get bigger and had to really, really fight that weight. That's when the weight just became insurmountable, and I knew that it was just a limited amount of time. You know, I went to Santa Anita, and I rode some great horses. I rode Ferdinand for Charlie. I rode a lot of stakes winners for Charlie Whittingham when I was 17 years old the next year. And I got to travel around the world went overseas and rode, traveled to the Midwest and rode at Arlington Park the first year it opened, and down in Florida at Gulfstream. So I got around and made a lot of contacts with trainers and owners, and which really helped me when I started training. I was able to, with all the contacts I had throughout the United States when I started training, to this day, I still am meeting people that I rode for, they're fathers and grandfathers now that the kids are coming up. They're fathers and grandfathers new for me, to where I'm still meeting people that I rode for way back when.
Wesley, you said something a minute ago that I love. You said you were used to winning when you arrived in New York. You're still used to winning now. And when you arrived, I read the story that it was days and you dropped a bug. You were back to the 7-pound bug. It took you no time at all to win that fifth winner. And you mentioned Lenny Goodman was your agent, the best agent around. How did you get connected with him?
My grandfather in New York was the outrider there, and he had been, prior to his death, which he died a couple years before I moved to New York, but he was telling Lenny about me, that I was a young kid riding in the fairs, and, I had aspired to come to New York and really wanted, that was my dream, and so he had made the connection between Lenny and him and me. So that's how that all came about.
Wesley, we know the difficulties of riding, the weight we've already talked about, the injuries, the ups and downs, and given that your father was a rider, you, I'm sure, saw all of it when you were a young kid. You were prepared for that, but were your parents worried at all?
No, at that time, there just wasn't that fear. That was an era where racing, that was just part of the game. And there was, I had no fear, as well as, anyone involved in racing at that time, and still to today. It was just something that came along with your dream. If that's what you wanted to do, that wasn't even really a thought.
You're riding in New York in such a great era. And let's talk about for a minute the other riders in the room that you rode with, and who was instrumental to you in maybe showing you what they learned and maybe, showing you the ropes?
At that time in the jocks room in New York, there were some great riders. The Angel there, George Velasquez there. The guy in my corner was really helped me a lot. Gay, the rider of Seattle Slew. He was a very tactical rider, especially on the grass. And the whole jocks room in New York were just, if you look back on it now, they were Hall of Famers. And, here was a young 16-year-old kid come in there that they welcomed, although it was a rivalry. They never treated me any different than any of the other jocks in the room. When you pull your goggles down, at 16 years old, there's no age limit. They don't look over at me and they're taking care of some young boy. Everybody's trying to win. And especially at that time, they were given a lot more latitude as far as how the race riding tactics were concerned. So you either learn real fast or you end up hitting the dirt. And, I was fortunate that I already knew that going into there. So I was really fortunate that I was able to speak Spanish at a young age as well. I've been bilingual since I'm a little boy coming onto the racetrack, and that was something. Languages have always come very, very easy to me, which a lot of things don't, but that does. So I was able to speak Spanish in the jockey's room, and I never really let that be known until I started into training. I just kind of kept that to myself. I was always, so I could hear what was going on in the jockey's room itself without anybody even knowing that I could speak Spanish.
Wesley Ward joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wesley, how would you describe your riding style?
You know, I've always liked the way that the Spanish riders ride. They're always very, very stylish, the way they ride. And, you know, when you – it's almost like any athlete when you – you know, no matter what it is, when you start at a young age, you can kind of – it's easier to learn how to do things as opposed to if you start a sport when you get a little older. So being so young, you know, I took – as I said, in train, you know, as I went all over the world and watching all the – keeping my eyes open and just to be a horseman, I also picked a lot of things from a lot of different jockeys. But, you know, it's just like watching, I'm sure that if you watched, you know, the Olympics and the gymnasts and, you know, there's a certain form that they have. And it's the same with jockeys as well. You know, if you look at the riders throughout, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and now to the modern age, you know, you'll see a lot of riders that have really, really nice form on the back of a horse the last quarter mile of a race when they're finishing. And there are also different tactics as far as, you know, some guys come from behind and some guys are better in front. Their styles, but as a jockey, I like to come from behind as opposed to now as a trainer. Most of my 2-year-olds shoot right to the lead. You know, I break them and teach them to, you know, sort of to come out early. But as a rider, I used to like to take back and make one big run the last part of the race.
Why did that change for you when you were a jockey, come from behind, and then now as a trainer, you like speed? Why is that?
You know, I started training at a young age, as I said before, and I always had a yearning to be at the A tracks. But you know, when you're you know, a jockey and trainer, I had to start all over, start brand new. I had to go back home to Washington State to start training, and you know, I started with nothing, just a couple of horses, and broke and trained a lot of horses for a lot of trainers, and there were a lot of owners that sent me horses that didn't have trainers. And that's how I got going as a trainer. So the first year, you know, we're claiming horses at a, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 horses, and kind of putting them back together and trying to get them, lead them back over there a few weeks later in their best shape that I could get them. And just knew that at the end of the day, I didn't want to be at a, you know, the B or the C tracks, and I really wanted to get back to, you know, the Santa Anita circuits and the Belmont and Saratoga circuits. And so I sort of found a little bit of a niche into where I could have the 2-year-olds, you know, break them at one and kind of keep them going to where when you put them in the first few races of the year in May and June, that I would have mine absolutely ready. More well prepared than my opponents would be, so to say. And in doing that, I found a little bit of a niche to where, you know, if you could teach the horses to break and go to the front, you know, they could, whereas, you know, some of the better horses with pedigrees or some of the horses that were ultimately at the end of the day were going to be better than mine. I could get them the first few races because mine were more prepared. And that's how I found that little bit of a niche in Southern California, and I moved down there to where that if mine were better prepared the first few races of the year, I could win them, and I could win those big purses that they have, and then I could end up turning the horses over and selling them or you know, making a big profit for a horse that I would have purchased for a nominal fee.
Now, as a trainer, Wesley, is that what you look for from a rider as well, a rider who can get a horse out of the gate?
Well, certainly, you know, I like to get, you know, you get used to certain riders that that'll come and work with you in the mornings and get a feel for the horses that they have. And I always try to give, you know, the underdog a chance. I always try. There's a lot of riders out there that just are just as good as the top guys that we have, but they're never given that type of chance. So a lot of guys will come and put the time and effort in the mornings to work with me and work with the horses that we have, to where, you know, it comes to the spring meet at Keeneland and they put that effort and time in, I try to reward them with some good fast 2-year-olds that I'm training.
It's a great opportunity for those jockeys you mentioned, and you must do that because you know how hard the life is for a jockey.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of guys that are out there that are going to put that time in, and they deserve a chance.
Going back again, Wesley, you deserved a chance better than anyone. All the success you found, especially as an apprentice, 1984 leading apprentice, Eclipse Award leading apprentice. And let's talk about that for a minute. I read an article in which it described your crazy schedule. And you would ride in New York during the day. You go to the Meadowlands at night. And I can't even imagine, obviously, as an apprentice, you want to ride as much as possible to rack up those wins. And I can't imagine how busy you must have been and how exhausting that had to be.
Yeah, but you're 16 years old. So you're really not exhausted at all. And especially it's something that you love to do, as you know. You know, you can't get enough of it. And especially being 16 years old, you don't get tired. You know, you wake up and you know, all you can do is want to ride that however many races they put at you. So, you know, it sounds like a demanding schedule, of which today for me it would be. I wouldn't be able to do it. But when you're 16 and that's, you know, you just can't get enough of it, that's it was like a dream come true, as I've said many times during this interview. But, you know, I just couldn't get enough of riding races. You know, I won, I don't know, 430 races with my apprentice allowance. And you know, if they had some early morning place where they were running, I'd have been there.
So I mentioned during the intro, you were leading rider at Aqueduct, Belmont, and the Meadowlands, and you went on to win the Eclipse Award. And when you accepted that trophy for the Eclipse Award, describe the feeling you had to get what you wanted. That was your goal from the very beginning.
That was my goal, and I won the Eclipse Award, and I flew out from New York to receive the Eclipse Award in California. But I'll tell you, at that time, what was more exciting to me was I rode at Santa Anita that day for the first time, and I won a race coming down the hill. And at that time on that day, it was more exciting for me to win that race coming, you know, down the hill as fast as they were flying down there and making a right and a left and going over the dirt course and onto to the grass. And I won it for a trainer that I knew since I was a little boy named Bob Meeking. It was more thrilling and exciting to win that race than it was to go that evening for the big party and win the Eclipse Awards. I'll tell you, it was just... it was a great time in my life, and it was a great day all around from winning that race and then going that evening and winning and accepting the Eclipse Award. It was really something special.
I love it. Folks, we will continue our visit with Wesley Ward right after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use the monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too. And I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They're at the top of the lane. Stonetastic, the grey, tries to hold on. Lee Court, Judy the Beauty on the grandstand side, coming home gamely as well. And Better Lucky, but it's Judy the Beauty and Better Lucky, the two coming to dispute it now. Judy the Beauty sticks her neck out, goes for the wire. On the outside, Better Lucky's catching. Better Lucky, Judy the Beauty. Judy the Beauty, one and a head in a thriller. Judy the Beauty, Better Lucky just couldn't get there. Thank you, Mary Lou, came running on for third.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by Wesley Ward. Wesley, that was a replay of the 2014 Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Judy the Beauty, what do you feel when you hear that replay?
Oh, that was great. Oh, what a feeling that was.
She was quite the successful racehorse, went on to be the Eclipse Champion female sprinter for 2014. What kind of a horse was she to train?
Nightmare. she had a million problems, and she came through on the day. It was unbelievable.
How do you deal with a quirky horse like that?
She's one of those horses that was just a day by day. You know, you wake up every morning, you assess how she is, and that's when you decide how you're going to train her on that day.
She won that race by a head. Were you nervous at any point during that race? Did you doubt?
I was actually not there. I was in Florida. My son had a track championship meet there that day, so I elected to stay home to bring myself some luck and do the right thing, and it paid off.
Definitely did. Hootenanny also won Breeders' Cup that year, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. And, what a successful day. You weren't even there. And obviously family's important to you. You chose instead to be there with your son.
Yeah, you just kind of, these years and time goes by so fast. And you know, you're not going to get these times back when they're little. And as I've said from the start of this interview, I knew that this is the career path I have. And it's not a career path. It's a lifestyle or a life. And I know I'm going to be in this forever. But these little guys, time is getting kind of small here for them. And my youngest child is going to be in high school next year. My oldest is second year University of Miami, as I said before. So, you know how when you get in college, it's like that old song, the cats in the cradles. Let me have the keys, Dad. You know, that's kind of like where we're at. So, you know, at least the two little guys are still with me every day, and we have a few years left with them.
Do they have any aspirations of following in your footsteps?
Let's hope not. this is a tough game, and it kind of consumes you and consumes your life, and it's all you kind of think about, and all you when you wake up in the morning, and you go to sleep at night, you kind of have a plan for the next morning, and that all changes, and all throughout the day you're thinking about the horses and what you're going to do with them, and it's a lot of ups and downs in this game. You have to have an iron constitution and a tough mind to sustain not only how you're doing, but also how people think about you and how you think people are thinking about you. And, you know, it doesn't change, but it seems to be, this game is more or less what's happening now that people judge you by. And even though, I'm sure there's a wealth of trainers out there from the top track to the bottom that, you know, are as accomplished as the guys at the top, and yet they never get the chance or had the chance and can't sustain it. And so it's just it's a tough life. And, you know, that's why with these kids, you want to do the best that you can with them.
So, Wesley, obviously you mentioned the lifestyle, the vigorous lifestyle that comes with riding, that comes with training. And having a family is a whole nother different thing, and you obviously commit much of your time to your family. So when were you ready to start a family?
Not early, that's for sure. You know, I knew just, you know, I needed to get some sort of a stability and, you know, financially before we moved forward with having children. And, you know, luckily enough, I was going okay in Southern California when my eldest son Riley was born. And then as the other two came, and, you know, we were, we kind of knew where the direction we were going, and started to get a lot more clients and a lot more stability in the business end of things. And that's when, you know, I sort of started to see where Southern California was sort of a little bit on the slide, and I kind of was looking around and what would be better for my family. And I thought that the East Coast would be a better opportunity business-wise for me. And I trained my first 17 years in Southern California, which I thought was a great education as far as getting educated in how to train horses at the best level, whether it be at Sanity in Del Mar, Hollywood Park, at a $10,000 level, where you were competing against very, very tough trainers at that level on up to, you know, the greatest stakes, which you had Bobby Frankel and Charlie Whittingham and all those guys at that time. It's like going to Harvard and for a business school for horse racing, because if you can make it there in Southern California, you've really done something, you really learned your lessons in how to train. And that's when I thought that the best thing for me was to and my family at that time, and the way racing was shifting east, that if I made a move early for my children, because that would be my only time to do that. You know, once they got, you know, ingrained and entrenched in the school and friends, I'd have been there to this day in Southern California. But I was able to move them at a young age to where they, you know, started grade school in South Florida, and they're getting a great education and very stable as far as, you know, friends and education that they're in, to where that, you know, I racing on the East Coast in Florida, this is where you want to be in the wintertime. And then up in the summers when they're off school, you're able to move up north to Kentucky and New York. And so it was a great circuit, and it was a great time for me to move.
They are definitely fortunate that you are able to provide that stable lifestyle, because jockeys are basically gypsies, and you know that better than anyone. Prior to the end of your riding career, you actually rode in Europe. You rode in Malaysia and Singapore and all these different places. And what was that experience like in the cultural shock I'm sure you experienced?
I went over just for a jockey championship in Singapore and Malaysia, but I rode in Italy for a while, and was able to travel around Europe, ride, which was a great experience as a young guy. I was 19 years old at the time, and able to see how the racing and European racing goes over there. I was very fortunate.
Other American jockeys did that prior to you: Steve Cawthon, Cash Asmussen, and I'm sure the weight had a little bit to do with that decision for you, given that the weights are heavier in Europe.
It was, but at that time, you know, you'd have to do 130 pounds on one day, but then you'd have to do 114 pounds 3 or 4 days later. So you're kind of going up and down, and really didn't help me that much, because I was able to kind of gain a little weight for a few days and I had to take it off, and it was kind of a little bit of up and down, which kind of at the end of the day really didn't help that much.
I heard you turn to running to help control your weight, and you were very successful at that, actually. Even maybe perhaps had an opportunity to be on the Olympic team.
Well, I found that the only way I was able to sustain my weight was to run. And I used to run 6 to 10 miles a day. And I ended up starting Marty Wilson's wife, Carla. I started befriended her, and she started taking me to the 10Ks they had down here in Florida. And got to be pretty good at it. And it just got to be where I got to be very good at it. And I thought that there were some offers to where I could, if I would have kept going forward with that, I might have been able to get some scholarships into college. But it just didn't, the love for riding, you know, overtook everything I wanted to do. So I had no interest in going that direction. But I was pretty fast.
So we've talked about the weight issues, Wesley. Now, something else jockeys deal with on a regular basis, obviously, injuries. Did you suffer any injuries throughout your riding career?
I broke both arms, got into some horrendous spills, but never really got any serious where I was always very paranoid about going down. First thing I did was I always took off my boots. I was the only thing that worried me was paralysis. I just, you know, just that was something that was always at the forefront when I went down. First thing I did was I took my boots off and made sure I could feel my toes and wiggle my toes every time I went down, and because you get knocked unconscious. I mean, when you come back to being consciousness, that was the first thing I did. And then I always kind of paranoid about that. I'd always walk back to the jockey room. I'd never go back in the ambulance.
I think every jockey's a little bit superstitious. Did you have any funny superstitions other than what you just mentioned?
Always. You know, you're always praying when you go out there that you have a, you know, good, safe trip, and everyone around you does, and the horse, you know, you just want everything to go right. You always try to do everything right. But, it's a day-to-day thing that we're going through every day, and everybody's out there trying to win. So it's just, as you know.
Wesley Ward joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Wesley, eventually the time came when you knew you would have to give up riding and you turned to training. But how difficult of a decision was that for you?
Very. The first year I stopped, it was like, the one good thing was that I didn't have to watch my weight anymore. But the bad thing was I didn't know which direction I was going to go as far as, you know, I had no clients behind me to start training, and I had to sort of start from zero again and prove myself, and was pretty difficult.
Do you still miss riding?
I still ride. I still break the horses myself, so I'm still involved that way. Usually the first ones on their back. Last few years, some of the guys that have been with me for 20 years have kind of taken that load away from me, or that job away from me now, to where I kind of just manage things. But you very, very much enjoy that, getting on the horses. But, you know, with everything going on now in my life, just don't have the time for it.
Wesley, I want to talk about, during the introduction, I mentioned that you made history. You're the first American trainer to win at Royal Ascot. And that is such an accomplishment. And how did you do it?
Well, everything kind of stems back to what we were talking about from the onset of how I got going as a trainer. I kind of found that little small niche in training the two-year-olds and getting them to win early. I just sort of was looking at it for a number of years and seeing where the first stakes races that are here in the States, you know, in California and in New York, they were July and August, and by then, you know, a lot of the bigger trainers had sort of unveiled their better prospects or their better precocious prospects for those types of races, and they kind of caught up and surpassed my horses in ability anyways, whereas I was able to get them the first race or two, they kind of caught on, and then the level of ability just kind of, I couldn't compete in the stakes races at that level. I didn't have that type of horse. But I started to watch the races over in Europe, and it was in the middle of June, and I just thought that, especially with everything that I knew from riding and competing in Europe, I just thought that the way that the trainers train in Europe was, for the most part, they take their horses back and try to make one run, and a lot of the better colts don't come out until August of that year. So I just thought, sort of along the same lines as in this year in where I made my mark in California, I could maybe try and do the same thing in England. And so I gave it a try the first year. It was a little bit hard convincing, you know, the partners I had in the horses, of which I was part owner in, to go over there, because for 50 years, you know, the Europeans had come to the United States and kind of dominate in grass races. Everybody thought I was crazy, but I really wanted to give it a try and just try. And, I had luck on the first day. We ran Strike the Tiger, a colt that I've read in partnership, ran and won the Windsor Castle, and didn't really understand what I'd accomplished at that time by breaking the barrier between Europe and the United States by going over there and winning. And then the next day, winning the Queen Mary with the filly that I bought from out of Ocala. And I didn't really understand what I'd done or what I'd accomplished, because it was just like, you know, I went so many races early, I thought this was something that could be done, and we did it. And there was a lot of luck involved on that particular week. It was sunshine, and the ground was fast and firm, so it really favored the horses, you know, up in the forefront of the races, of which mine kind of shot right to the lead, and we're able to hold on the last race. So I had a big advantage, not realizing that. With the long shots that I think it was 25 or 30 to 1, the first horse I ran, 33 to 1 that now that I remember is Strike the Tiger. So when Johnny Velasquez came, went over and rode the horses at the time, he came back into the winner's enclosure there and said, "This is big, Wesley. You don't understand. This is big." And I was just, I was sitting in a big top hat and tails and didn't really realize what all had happened, because it was a listed handicap race at Windsor Castle, and I just thought that but it really was winning a race at Royal Ascot was really, really big. And for most of the horsemen in the States, as far as trainers are concerned, you know, other than the top guys that are getting those type of horses, you don't realize how big Royal Ascot is, which to the rest of the world, it's like being in the Breeders' Cup, even more so. And, to actually win a couple of races the first year I went over there was amazing.
No, I've never been there, Wesley, but obviously watched it on TV, and it just looks like an extravagant celebration of racing, and people come out in great attire, and the Queen of England is there, and it just looks like a great experience. Now, talk to us a little bit about the difference in racing in Europe versus the United States.
From the 10 years I've been going there now, competing, what I see, especially coming into this game in the States here, when I was 16 at such a young age, and I was able to catch the tail end of the greatest trainers as guys that are coming in and successful now, they wouldn't hardly even know who they were. But when you're talking about, Woody Stevens and Frank Whiteley's and Charlie Whittingham's and you know, I was out riding and working horses for them and talking with them every day and having relationships with these type of guys at 16 that, you know, I'd been following for the, you know, 4 years I was a jockey, you know, and just kind of reading the forums and reading articles about these guys. To now, I see a lot more in Europe like it was back then when I came into the game, more so than it is now. I see the game's kind of changing now as opposed to Europe still has, you know, there's a big following from, you know, if I get in a taxi in during the time that I fly over there, every taxi driver will know who I am just based on, you know, the 2 years I've been there and running and competing there in Ascot, as opposed to if Bob Baffert gets out of a taxi and he's the greatest trainer that we have, that's won Triple Crowns, and he jumps out of a cab in JFK to go to a race in Belmont, chances are the taxi driver won't know who he is. So there's, you know, that country or the whole European continent there is really, really, it's a passionate sport that everyone follows and bets on and knows all the players, especially the top players in the game. And it's just not that way here as it was at one time.
Which is definitely sad to hear and realize. How do you think we can do better here in the States to make it more popular?
You know, I don't really have the answer to that. It's a shame because this is all I do, and so, you know, it's my only, I don't have another hobby other than racing. This is my life. Over in Europe, you know, that they would know, just like we turn on Sunday and they see all the professional football games, they would, they'll be turning on the TV to see who's running, you know, especially the better horses that they follow throughout the whole year. You know, the horses and the jockeys and the trainers will have a following like they do here in football. So it's just it's a shame, especially if you look at, when you go to all these tracks and you see all the old pictures from the big days of racing, and you see 100,000+ people at the big days. And even on the weekends, I mean, it was a big draw, and it still is a big draw in Europe, but it's not here.
Wesley, when you shipped to Europe as a trainer, you did not adjust your training style. In fact, the speed was very beneficial to you. However, as a rider, did you have to adjust your riding style when you rode in Europe?
Yes and no. For the most part, you really don't want to, you know, with the two-year-olds that I have that I train here, you can kind of go to the front as opposed to over there. Pretty much if you go to the front, it really, really favors horses that come from behind, even though it's albeit a slow pace. If you go to the front, for the most part, it's not going to happen.
Obviously, a lot of grass racing in Europe, and I read an article that you were especially successful on the grass as a rider. Now, talk a little bit about the differences as a rider from riding on the grass and the dirt.
I think that, where I learned to ride, I was riding on the fairs, and I was riding at half mile to 5/8 mile racetracks. So you'd have to save all that ground. You know, when you go into the starting gate, you're looking to get to the fence by the time you hit that first turn. Otherwise, if you don't, you know, whoever does has a big advantage over you. Same on the grass. If you ride the grass, you want to try to save ground, and then you want to get covered up. You know, you're better off coming from a little bit behind, getting covered up and get down on the grass. And then when you turn for home, kind of ease out to where they have daylight on the outside to try to make your run. And, you know, horses know boundaries. You know, they've been raised and born in a stall and raised in a pasture. So, you know, if you kind of get covered up there, and then when you get the last 3/16 of a mile or the last 1/8 of a mile, if you can kind of get them clear to the outside where they have daylight, and they can feel, you know, they're a lot of room to run, that's where they'll run the best.
Now I'm going to ask you a question I would like to know the answer to. Do you have to train a grass horse differently?
Definitely. Especially, milers or... You certainly want, you don't want to have fast whips. You want to have more, and I learned a lot of this training that I had just from standing up in the stands with all these great trainers, especially, I was great friends with Bobby Franco. He's the guy that put me in with the Ramseys when I first made the move east. I asked him, I told him that my family is young and I wanted to move east if there was anything to do, and he's the one that called Mr. Ramsey and for me. And when I made this move back here, he put me in touch with Mr. Ramsey and called me back and made the connection to where Mr. Ramsey sent a whole truckload of horses down here when I first started to train. And so being up there in that stand with him every day at Hollywood Park in Santa Anita, going to dinner with him and just kind of waiting for the opportune time to ask him questions when he would want to answer that question back when he wasn't busy, or just kind of listening to what he had to say and picking his brain at things. That's where you kind of learn, and through his experiences and what worked for him and what didn't work for him, and I kind of applied that to my training style, and that's really what's helped me over the years, is just kind of talking to a lot of the different trainers that were successful. Bobby's theory was, to work anything that works fast, certainly you can kind of, that wouldn't be what you'd want to do. You kind of want to work steady. The horse is bringing them into the races. You wouldn't want to put too much speed into them.
Wesley, unfortunately, we are all out of time. Thank you so much for joining us and wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.